Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Beyond the Couch with Bridges Mental Health. I'm Christy. Today, I am with Jean Ko, who actually reached out to us via email asking us to talk about Asian name trauma. And she shared her beautiful story about reclaiming her name. And we thought that it would be amazing to invite her on to share her own story directly. Jean Ko is a multi-hyphenate. She's the first generation Korean-American singer, songwriter, writer, artist, activist, and entrepreneur based in Brooklyn, New York. And would love to invite you to introduce yourself as well.
Sure. Yes. I'm so happy to be on the podcast. I am, like you said, a Korean-American woman of color. I started my creative career as a singer and songwriter for our band, Tian and Greg, with my husband. We also have a podcast called Gajok, and Gajok in Korean means family. And the podcast is about the joys, the struggles, and the beauty of being Asian-American and the Asian-American experience. I also have a blog on our website, tianandgreg.com. And that's where I house all of my long form pieces about identity. In the last 2 years, I have kind of become this online voice for the Asian American community. I have a background in activism, and with the rise of anti-Asian hate, I have been more vocal on our social media platform that started out as just a place for me to promote our music and document our music journey. And now I kind of use that space to share the stories of Asian Americans that are dying at the hands of anti-Asian racism. It's become this space for me to just express myself in all different types of artistic forms.
Yeah, I would feel like the words that you have in your multi-hyphenate description are only some of them, that you could also add on so much more, and you're building community, you're being a voice and sharing so much, not only of your own story, but honoring and giving tributes to the people that we've lost recently. So in addition to all of the other roles that you play then, Jean, can you tell us a little bit about your process of reclaiming your own name?
Yeah. So I reached out to you guys to talk about Asian name trauma because I had been going through my own journey of reclaiming my name. And it started after the Atlanta spa shootings, but I feel like I've been kind of on this journey of reclaiming my cultural identity for a long time. Like probably over the last 33 years of my life, I've been trying to unlearn things that I've learned in my childhood, like internalized racism and culturally racial things that happened to me unknowingly, things that I internalized and then responded to out of a place of survival. I think in adulthood, I started to try to understand that more. And so I would say like over the last 10 years, I've been slowly getting away from living a life where I lived more whitewashed or really rejecting my culture. And so I think it started when I went on a service trip to Honduras my senior year of college, and going on that trip and seeing another country's culture and kind of immersing myself in that kind of made me more curious about my own background and where I came from. And so a couple years after I worked for Students Helping Honduras, I ended up working for Liberty in North Korea, that's based out in Long Beach, California. I had never lived in California before, and I had never been around that many Asian people in my life. Living in a place where I was no longer the minority really was paradigm shifting for me. And I know that you also moved to California, I think earlier in childhood for you. And I remember listening to a previous episode where you talked about moving from Chicago and then going to California and then just kind of having your eyes open. And I kind of had that happen for me in adulthood, you know, at 23, I didn't have to walk around with this internal shield that I didn't even realize was in there. I could just exist and no one's going to look at me twice. And that was really, in a way that I didn't realize, it was really life-changing. Then we moved back to New York City, me and my husband, Greg. And I think I was just kind of back in that East Coast state of mind. Oh yeah, I am a minority again. And you just kind of fall back into those old habits of just dealing with it and putting up with it and just becoming desensitized to it. Oh yeah, people are racist towards Asians. Totally, totally normal, totally my life, and just accepting that reality. And I think over the years, Asians started to gain more traction in media. We had more representation. Bong Joon-ho won the Oscar for best film. And, you know, like I think steadily I started to kind of question the things that I just accepted. Like, okay, people are racist towards Asians. Well, I don't think that's right. You know, like instead of just accepting that reality for myself. And yeah. And then with the rise of COVID and the rise of anti-Asian hate, and I think I started to realize how I had been convinced that my name was weird. My culture was weird. My name is ugly. My culture is foreign. And I think as Minari was receiving on such a large scale, so much accolade, I realized this story can't go from being weird and foreign to beautiful and Oscar nominated. You know what I mean? And so I think that kind of pulled the wool off of my eyes. And it just made me start thinking differently about myself. And I think my dad in June of 2020, he was diagnosed with cancer. And we basically lived in Virginia for a year, taking care of my dad, taking him to appointments. And I think that time too was really critical to me understanding where I come from more, because I would have more conversations with them about our family history. I think the reclamation process happened over probably the course of 10 years, but really over the last 2 years, it has been just this rapid awakening. With the becoming proud of where I come from came this idea of, oh, I don't know that my name has ever really felt correct. My name used to be Chi Un Ko, and my name at birth was Chi Un Ko. Well, it was Ko Chi Un, you know, because in Korean they say the last name first, but it was Chi Un, not Chi. My name was incorrectly transliterated and split into two separate words, Chi and Un, instead of one name, which was Chi-un. And so growing up, I went to elementary school, and that was when I started being called Chi. Up until the age of four, I was called Chi-un. And so, you know, when you're four, your things are happening, people are telling you what to do, and you just do it. And so I think on a subconscious level, I learned to internalize these racist thoughts towards myself, just being called Chi, because as soon as I would open my mouth and say, oh, my name is Chi, then people would come back at me and say, oh, is it like your inner Chi? Oh, does your name mean energy in Chinese? Or they would say Chia or Chia Pet, or they would just come up with like all these different names, and they would just basically disrespect my name. And so then I just learned from the age of four that, oh, my name is weird. I'm different. Right. And so I think that really messed with my identity a lot. And that's why at the age of 33, I'm kind of like peeling back the layers and unlearning and reclaiming things that were lost at such an early age.
So you've gone from your name being butchered and spliced through the immigration process into then reclaiming your name as Chi-un.
Right. Exactly. Basically the time where I feel like I started deciding, okay, I'm going to reclaim my name, was after the Atlanta spa shootings in March of last year. Up until that point, we had seen so many Asian Americans getting beaten in the streets, getting killed, and nothing really happening. I think when the Atlanta spa shootings happened, I just broke. And I think a lot of other Asian Americans broke as well. It felt like a massive boundary crossing. And we have already had so many of our boundaries crossed throughout our history. I think hearing their names being butchered, I felt disrespected. I felt like they were being disrespected. They had already been very disrespected, and they couldn't even be honored in their death by just saying their name correctly. And I always felt like my Koreanness was not visible in my name. And so I started by adding Chi-un into my name. So I said, my name was Chi Chi-un Ko. So I put it as my middle name. I think that felt safe at first. I had never even thought about reclaiming my like Chi-un as my first name. March 2021 was the beginning of me no longer accepting when people make fun of me for being Asian, when people make really nasty racist jokes and they say, oh, they're just jokes. Like, I'm no longer willing to accept that anymore. And these were things I used to accept because I grew up in very white spaces. I grew up in Northern Virginia, where it's predominantly white and it is more diverse, but it's still very white. And as I started making these choices to integrate myself into my own community and to make Asian American female friends, things started to shift in my brain. Through that process of meeting other Asian women who had their full names made me want that too. And so I think it took like probably 6 months following the Atlanta Spa shootings for me to come to this idea that I could go by Jian. And so, yeah, I started to do that and it felt really good. I think it felt scary, but it felt really good and it felt safe. It felt like me, you know, and I didn't realize how much my name informed who I was and how much being Chi had made me shrink back or feel embarrassed because it wasn't my name. But with Jian, I have so much more of this love and attachment to it because it's the name that my parents named me. It's the name that my family calls me. It's the name that I've always had. And it was always in this safe, secret space of Korean spaces. And so to start opening that up to other spaces where I had kept it out, it felt really scary and dangerous. But I think it also felt like I'm allowed to exist in this way. I'm allowed to exist in my fullness in non-Korean spaces, in white spaces. I'm allowed to take up this space as a Korean American woman. And that was really liberating for me. And it continues to be liberating for me.
In hearing you, I'm thinking about all of my own experiences that felt so implicit and invisible, yet so confining, where it just was like growing up, there were naturally these segments between my life, like who I was at school versus who I was at home, and then who I was in our Asian church community. And they felt so segmented, and I never did anything with all of that I absorbed at school or with my like white friends. I just absorbed all of it and got smaller and smaller. So you're emphasizing of, I didn't even know it was an option, not only to reclaim your name, but even just to have it as your middle name instead felt safer. But these things are kind of revealing themselves to you as the intensity and the violence in our communities is really bringing this to the forefront. And so what has it been like then to just own that this is an option for you and fully take it, introducing yourself as Jian instead of Chi?
At first, anytime I would introduce myself as Jian, immediately my brain would say, no, it's not. So it would be like, hi, I'm Jian. No, it's not. It felt like I had this like internal voice that was constantly trying to protect me from the racism that I had endured my entire life. And so that is the voice that conditions me to shrink back, to erase myself because I'm not allowed to exist. It's dangerous to exist in my fullness in white spaces. It felt like an awakening, but at the same time, it felt like so scary to think about doing that. Like, okay, I have to tell people that I've known for my entire life who have only known me as Chi to call me Jian now. Like to exist as Jian is to exist as like a too Asian person. Like, don't be that Asian. And that's how I felt my entire life. I can only be Asian enough to make white people not feel uncomfortable. And honestly, I've hated my name, like my legal name, Chi, my entire life. I never felt like that was my name. I was always made fun of it and I hated it. But in some ways, I am actually really glad that my name was Chi because it was undeniably Asian. And so no matter how much I wanted to separate myself from being Asian, I couldn't. The way that I look, you know, I am obviously Asian, but my name made it very clear, right? And so, yeah, I think in the reclamation of my name, it has been really difficult. I have done so much online research, and I mentioned that I found content online that was actually more traumatic than it was helpful. And one of those things was a video. It was a recording of this class that this professor, Sam Richards, teaches every year. He's a sociology professor at Penn State University. And he basically has 5 to 10 students to come to this front of the classroom, and basically an entire auditorium full of students are watching. And he chooses 1 to 2 people who are not Asian to say their names. He pulls their names up on this giant screen, and all of them have Asian sounding names. And it's basically public humiliation where these students are trying to read their names and they just completely butcher their names. And the entire auditorium is laughing. And the Asian students at the front are just sheepishly, embarrassedly laughing, or like, I don't know, they're just uncomfortable, you know? And it's traumatic, honestly. Watching them is traumatizing. And yeah, it's just so demoralizing and dehumanizing. And so I think watching things like that were just kind of reminding me, this is exactly why you're not allowed to be Tian in America, which to me feels like even more Asian than Chi. I'm like going in the quote unquote opposite direction of safety, you know, but it's actually going in the direction of wholeness. You know, I've been in therapy for the last 3 years now, and I feel like a lot of my awareness of internalized racism has come from my work in therapy and just learning how to go to bat for myself with my own therapist. If my therapist says something that I think feels a little tone deaf, then I'll tell her. And she is a proponent of me speaking up for myself and saying the things that I don't like. And that has been honestly a game changer, to have a therapist who is my advocate and wants me to say the things that I don't like to her at her own expense, you know, and she has to deal with her own emotions of that. I think both of us have grown so much as people because of our therapeutic relationship. And I feel so liberated from always feeling so scared to not be able to say the things that I feel to white people. And so I've been in this practice of doing that with my therapist, and it has been so transformative. And the reason I'm here has a lot to do with, on a weekly basis, unpacking my trauma with my therapist and her just sitting and holding space and validating my pain and the racist experiences that I've had. Also having the space to, in real time, have a constructive conflict with my own therapist. And so, yeah, therapy has been a huge life changer and game changer for me.
We can tend to vent and complain and talk about our resentments, but privately to safe people, rarely to the people it's actually about.
Yeah.
And for you to actually say when you think that your therapist is saying something tone deaf, and then her having whatever feelings she does about it, and it not being your job to take care of them, that it's her own work to sit with those feelings and do whatever she needs to do to process them. But that's your space to advocate for yourself.
Yes. And I do think as an Asian American, going to therapy is transformative because it's a space where you are at the center. If we think about Asian Americans in society, we tend to center white voices or other voices and not our own voice. And so therapy is this space where I learn how to be the center and I learn how to validate my own needs. I never knew how to do that before. I didn't even know I was allowed to do that. I thought having needs was selfish. And through therapy, I've learned that that's not. And so I do think, you know, even though my therapist is not an Asian American, I have learned so much about reclaiming my voice through therapy. You know, in the reclamation of my culture, in the reclamation of my name, I have also learned to reclaim what I deserve, what I'm worth. And it's been kind of this holistic change. You know, you don't just change one area of your life and then that's it. That one change affects everything too, you know?
Because I'm hearing that along with you reclaiming your name that is and was your name your whole life.
Yes.
It sounds like you're doing an incredible amount of growth and learning. And so much of growth I'm finding is like actually unpeeling or removing a lot of the gunk and the stuff that's gotten in the way of who we actually are or who we have been our whole lives, rather than having to change into somebody new.
Yes.
It feels like you're recognizing that I have been worthy and deserving of this all the time. And I'm learning that again now, rather than you becoming more worthy.
Yes.
Does that resonate?
Yeah, 100%. Because like I always felt like, oh, I need to be better. I need to be better. I need to, or whatever, just change for other people. instead of just be fully me. And then whoever doesn't want to be a part of that will fall off, and they weren't supposed to be around anyway. And then the people who need to be around, you know, I've made space for them because the toxic people have fallen off, right? So there's more space and capacity for me to invest in friendships that can make space for all of me.
Hmm.
I want to ask you about your name and what your name journey has been like for you.
Because I was talking to you, I was inspired to talk to my parents about understanding a bit more of the history and their intentions with my name. And my parents were intentional in giving me an English name. Christy and my middle name were chosen by my dad, who wanted to honor my family's Christian faith. But my dad picking my American and legal name, my mom wanted to pick my Korean name. So I'm named after my mom's mom, Eunsuk. And my mom, in telling me about her decision, was wanting to really honor her mom because my grandmother was there for my mom, especially through extremely difficult experiences throughout her life. Yeah. And a big part of the name, too, was that my grandmother, during the Japanese occupation, her name as a schoolgirl was changed into a Japanese version of her name. And so even to this day, that is her legal name, the Japanese version. And so Eunsuk itself was kind of wiped from the family history there. And she told me that the syllable of Suk was the one that was used for all of the women in her generation. And so then she wanted to honor that name and bring it back and make that real. And so that's some way of continuing that line. And I was always confused because I knew that I was named after her. But now hearing more of like the kind of erasure that happened, it makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. Even in the process of talking to my mom, I heard so much more about my grandmother's maiden name and all of like the history of how patriotic her family was. And so you reclaiming your name has kicked up my own ability to be curious about my own name and be that much more connected to the history that I'm part of.
Me talking to you about your name, I thought it was going to be like, yeah, I felt like I fit in, and it was going to be totally different from my experience. But I think your name, Eunsuk, is a reclamation of your grandmother's name, right? And like your grandmother had her name erased like 100 years ago, you know what I mean? And like, and when you were born, your mom wanted to honor that erasure by reclaiming it in you. And that's just so beautiful and so powerful. And I feel so honored that, you know, an email that I sent to you, not thinking that you were going to ask me to be on this episode, was going to lead to you asking your mom about your name and your family. And then you get to learn more about who you are, you know? And I think that's kind of like the journey that I'm on right now. And a lot of us are on right now as Asian Americans.
Yeah. I think that that speaks to like the ripple effect of people being more authentic and being brave enough to share it more publicly too, is that I just see Asian Americans popping up everywhere and creating small pockets of community. And every time we see another person putting something out there, it actually feels that much more validating.
Yeah. I do feel a lot of anger coming up because it feels like 31 years of my life in America, I have just thought I'm not good enough. Yeah. I wish that at four, I could have been like, my name's Chin and I'm awesome and I eat delicious food and you may think it's weird, but it's not. Like, I wish that I had that, but I didn't. And that's okay. And I think there's room for grieving that little girl who deserved all the space to eat kimchi at school. But now at 33, I have all the space and we have all the space.
And I really appreciate, Jian, like your being courageous and sharing the story. And I also want to be like transparent in my having to learn how to pronounce your name correctly in the process of us doing this podcast and my own stuff that came up of like, oh, I don't have this natural instinct for a Korean pronunciation, and I can read it and say it, but I don't genuinely live in the language. And so I've appreciated your educating me on how to properly pronounce your name and being patient too.
I think it was my honor to do it with you. In other spaces, it might feel annoying. Yeah, when I hear my name said correctly and when I hear it said by another Korean person, it just feels so validating. I can't even express to you how seen I feel and how known I feel when someone says my name. And so I think that's been another really beautiful gift from reclaiming my name is just feeling validated.
This podcast episode is more limited in time compared to all of the details and the nuance and richness of Chien's story. And she also shares so much more about it and all the other platforms. Before we wrap up, where can you point people to learn more about you first?
Yes. So if you would like to support me and the creative work that I do, you can find us at patreon.com/Chien and Greg. Another way you can support us is by listening to our podcast called Kajok. We have monthly Kajok gatherings that I mentioned earlier. So if you are a Korean American or Korean diasporic woman looking for community to unpack what it means to be Korean, Korean American, and American together in a safe space, please email me at chienandgreg@gmail.com.
Amazing. Chien has an amazing singing voice too. It is powerful. You all have to listen to her.
Yeah, listen to our music. You can find that on our website, chienandgreg.com.
Awesome. If you have any questions for us at Bridges, all of our stuff is below too. Email us just like Chien did, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Chien, so much.
Thank you. Bye.